in the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking that we could pull, I don't know, Hall of Famer. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now, introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. There is nothing more fun than opening an Arena Club Slab Pack. I mean, it is so much better than any mystery pack that I've ever purchased because there is a focus on transparency. There is a display of available cards. There are hit rates you can get. When you're graded, you're given a rationale. It is the marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, and displaying. Arena Club Slab Packs are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling. You can have them officially graded by Arena Club. The Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. Whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have to check out. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/badmoney. Wow, that's a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack, that's $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/badmoney for 10% off your first purchase.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You got problems that you ought to be concerned with. Moolah! You don't know how you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with
Gabe S.
Dunn.
Hello and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. I'm your host, Gabe S. Dunn. And with me today, Vienna, do you want to tell my audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Vienna Farron. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of New York. I work with individuals, couples, and families within the context of understanding the family systems that we grew up in. I have a national best-selling book called The Origins of You, which we'll probably dive into a little bit today. And I am a host of the podcast This Keeps Happening, where I get to speak with anonymous guests about patterns, challenges, family stuff, relational stuff, whatever it is that they're feeling stuck in life. And even though it's not a therapy session, it can feel like you're kind of listening in on a really intimate conversation. And they've been really beautiful conversations for me to get to have with folks. A little bit about me, but I'm sure we'll get more into it as we go here.
Yeah, wow. I mean, so we've had other therapists on this show, probably more so than a money show you would think would have. And we've talked a bunch about like family of origin. And in my book, I talked about like what sort of patterns you repeat from what you witness in your family in terms of like financially and mental health wise. So can you explain? I mean, I'm sure most of the queer listeners of this show know already, but can you explain what a family of origin is?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of a fancy word for the family you grew up in. We use that family of origin or family systems. That's the language that we often use. But, you know, for me, my parents got divorced. They went through a very long divorce process when I was in first grade. And I share that because it means that I had two systems that I was growing up in and having to navigate and learn the rules in one home and the way to be in another home. And so it's really important for us when we're thinking about our families that are not always blood related, the important people in our lives, right, who play a really significant role in our lives and shaping who we are and how we are and how we see the world and how we relate to other people. It's so important for us to make sure that we have this really wide lens when we're thinking about it. I always share this little example, because I think it's an important one, because sometimes we get really narrow and we're like, oh, my family is this person right. and that person and this person. And I remember having a client who would spend their entire after school time from like 3:30 until 10 p.m. with the neighbor's family. Mm-hmm. And parent would come pick them up when they got back from their late night shift. And then they'd obviously go home to go to sleep. But it was really important to identify that even though those people were not, you know, blood related, maybe wouldn't have been characterized as family, were still such important players in this person's life, especially during their childhood. So again, I share that so that we have this really wide lens when we're thinking about like who are the very important people who played significant roles in my life when I was growing up.
And for your book, The Origin of You, what's the thesis? Like, you're exploring the ways in which all of these types of people build who a person becomes and what their quote unquote problems are.
So no matter who we are, we've gone through some stuff, right, in our history. And some of it might be really obvious for us, and some of it might be a little bit more subtle and harder for us to spot. But I think I use the word wounds in my book because when we use the word trauma, a lot of times people are like, I don't have trauma. And so they sort of excuse themselves from the conversation around healing. And for me, wounds is really important. I think as kids, you know, that word is like the physical wound. You scrape your knee, you've got to clean it up, you put a Band-Aid over it. Maybe a parent tells you to let some air get into it, and mm-hmm. then you take the Band-Aid off, and then that wound, you bang up against the side of a table, and boom, there it is again. And so this conversation about the emotional wounds that we experience growing up, and when we're kids or teenagers, right, most of the time we're just surviving to the other side, meaning, hey, I'm going to like white knuckle my way there. I'm going to brute force my way there. I'm just going to get to the other side. But in that process, as kids or teenagers or even young adults sometimes, we're not necessarily slowing down to acknowledge our pain properly, right? To honor it, to meet it in the way that we need to meet it. And so part of the premise of this book is that we have to look at these origin wounds, right? These times in our lives that shift the trajectory of the way that we relate to our sense of worthiness, mm-hmm. to our sense of belonging, to our sense and relationship with prioritization, to our sense of trust, and to our sense of safety and security in the world. And, you know, I know a lot of times people like, where do I look? How far back do I have to go? And obviously, I'm very aware that society and media and teachers and coaches and, you know, there's so many people and things that play into the way that we relate to all of this. But my work is in looking at, you know, the family of origin, these systems that we grew up in. And I think what I would say is that when you ask me about the thesis and really the premise of this book, for those of us who have unwanted patterns in our lives today, the patterns that we can't shake, whether it's continuing to pursue emotionally unavailable people, whether it's promising that you're going to set a boundary the next time and then not doing that, whether it's committing to fighting differently when you get into conflict and finding yourself fighting the same way that you always do, these are really good signs and indicators that there's irresolution in our past. And that's the work, right? Is to resolve what is unresolved so that we don't need to keep dancing and cycling and looping in these unwanted patterns and the way that they continue to show up. Because pain's got a clever way of grabbing for our attention. And, you know, it's not out to get us. I don't think it's cynically rubbing its hands together, but I do think pain will present and provide patterns for us as an attempt to get us to turn around and look back at something that hasn't been fully addressed or fully acknowledged.
Well, yeah, I mean, with money stuff too, it's like the repeating patterns, you can literally watch it happen on your bank statements, or you can watch it happen yeah. on your tax returns or things like that. And I wonder, is it because it's like the devil, you know, like you keep going back to stuff that doesn't work or that is painful, because is it because you're already expecting an outcome? So you're like, fine, I know what this bad outcome is, so I expect it. Or is it because you're like, this is just how I do things. Like, why do we keep repeating stuff that we know is not going to work?
Our systems, right? Our internal systems really like status quo. They like the familiarity. And the change that we can sit here and say, oh my gosh, like stop overspending, stop doing this, do this instead. Like I know the right thing to do, right? So many of us can sit here and be like, oh, my brain knows what to do, but for whatever reason, the rest of the stuff doesn't actually match up and catch up. And, you know, that's because there's so much other stuff that has to get updated as well. Do I feel deserving of being someone who's not in scarcity? Yeah. Right. Do I like what are the other layers and narratives that come into play? Because again, status quo, the familiarity is that I don't actually have to change something. And it's rarely the behavior because most of us know exactly what the behavior probably ought to be. It's yeah. all of the things, the underpinnings that, you know, that play into it. And that I think is so important because otherwise, we can get so frustrated with ourselves, right? It's like the self-critic wants to come out and be like, why can't you just do this differently? Like, what's wrong with you? You know, it just goes and goes and berates and berates. And I think it's so important for us to be able to take a step back and again, widen that lens to say, okay, I make sense in context. We always make sense in context, but that's the beauty. Now, that still might be infuriating to us at times, but I make sense in context. And so can I begin to understand more of the context and more of why my resistance to the thing that I say that I want to do is actually trying to protect me from something or is of service for me in some way, even if the thing that it's in service of feels so dysfunctional or unhealthy or like the opposite of what we actually want to be doing, right? Our systems, again, really make sense in context and they are trying to protect us from something that we maybe don't know how to confront or how to resolve or how to just, you know, navigate.
On your show where it's like, this keeps happening, which good Lord, I could call my book that. What, like, how easy or hard is it to just stop doing the same thing over and over again? And asking for a friend.
Always asking for a friend.
I know.
It's really hard. It's really hard to stop doing the same thing over and over again. And especially when you think about for how long we've been doing something.
Right.
You know, it's like it could be decades at a point where we're like, oh my gosh, I have been doing it this way for so long. And whether it's the thing that we saw, whether it's the thing that we were taught, whether it's the thing where we've swung the pendulum and we're like, I'm never going to operate this way because I saw, you know, this adult or this parent do it that way. And now I'm taking a path of opposition, right? Like there's so many ways in which we find ourselves in these repeat patterns. I can share a story. My relationship with money, you know, was a really interesting one that I had to really unpack at a number of different points in my life. And I'm sure there's still more to do. I grew up with a mom and a dad. I'm an only child, but like middle class. My parents were okay. My dad was a school teacher and my mom was also a part-time school teacher. And when they divorced, my mom really had nothing because she stopped. She was working really part-time, but there really wasn't a lot of money there. In fact, I would say when I was with her, really close to the poverty line. And then when I was with my dad, there was a little bit more abundance there. I went to a private school and I was around a decent amount of wealth. And so I think there was always a sense of really like not fully belonging, but trying to find the ways to fit in, et cetera, right? And there's a lot to this story, certainly. But I think one of the things that's important is that my dad was also someone who was very manipulative, psychologically abusive, you know, like the true term of a gaslighter. And I watched that be something that overtook my mom. You know, she really couldn't keep up with how quick my dad was with his words and how he could change, you know, a story like that. And I coded both of them. Like I was like, okay, dad is in control. He's got the power and he's also financially stable enough. And what I saw on the other side was someone who was, you know, at that time, I think I considered it weak and unsafe and not someone I wanted to resemble.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this was a conscious thing at the time, certainly, but I know that there was this path of, I don't want to be like that, because being like that is not okay. Because I saw what not having money did to her, right? There was no empowerment. There was such a disadvantage. And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a woman who doesn't have money. I am going to make sure that I set myself up in such a way where I can take care of myself and I don't have to worry about staying in a relationship or, you know, navigating relationships in a way that wasn't, you know, honorable and supportive for me. And I think it's important. Again, I share this story because I imagine even if the storyline doesn't relate to you or to your listener specifically, right, to think about the way in which we saw money being utilized, the way we saw people spend it or save it, or how they would have conversations about it, and how that then becomes part of the catalyst for the way that we do or don't do things. So great, I was someone who worked really hard. I was someone who juggled, you know, 5 or 6 jobs at one point. I was someone who didn't take help from anyone else because I never wanted to owe somebody anything. And all of these things were driven by this irresolution around the way that I related to this story. Again, there's so many layers to this, but to just give a little sprinkling of, you know, how we look at these things and to think about, like, what is the catalyst and what is the inspiration for why I do what I do, whether it's around money or anything else that we might talk about.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a new candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy. It would be so much easier if I was looking for someone to help me with sweetening audio, or let's say someone to run my merch shop, or all the little things that go into running a podcast. Usually something like that would be so slow and overwhelming. And honestly, I wish I had used Indeed, and I will use Indeed in the future. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Just go to Indeed.com/badwithmoney right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Managing my finances is incredibly stressful and time-consuming. I'm sure you guys know. You've been with me on this journey. You know how many finance apps I've tried. You know how much they haven't worked for me. And I'm always on the hunt for a finance app that fits my life. And then I tried Monarch. It is so easy to use with powerful features, collaboration tools, intuitive design, personalization, constant product improvements. I really value an app that allows me to do all of this without confusion. And especially important to me is intuitive design and the ability to personalize, because clearly finance is not one size fits all. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, collaborate on your budget, and get insights on your cash flow and recurring transactions. It's the easiest way to manage your household finances. Are you saving for a down payment, a wedding, a dream vacation? Monarch makes it so easy to help you reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Have you been frustrated with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads, difficult to use, rarely updated? So was Monarch. They built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive and powerful and ad-free and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Experience a personal finance app that prioritizes the user experience above all else. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Plus, there's ad-free privacy you can trust. We will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. That's monarchmoney.com/badmoney for your extended 30-day free trial. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything is more expensive these days when you're running a business, and you would be wise to find proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. The fact that you are able to reduce your IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud is incredible, and the ability to access your cloud financial system from anywhere saves you so much time and stress. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/badwithmoney. 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 So let's say you are grown up, you're out of this system, and you realize that you're replicating systems with the people around you. Like, one thing I've talked about on this show is that, so my dad was an addict and alcoholic, and he had friends for decades. And then once he got sober, he had to sort of reevaluate a lot of those friendships. And it's like a tough element of it because you don't really want to lose people, but you also are like, well, I have to look at what situations I'm being put in. So I wanted to ask about, like, what happens if you see that you're replicating that stuff, or what does that look like when you're, you know, an adult?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think when you are replicating anything, whether what it is you're replicating is the actual repeating or whether it's the opposition. And I always come back to the oppositional piece, because I think a lot of times the repetition is so obvious for us. It's like, oh, okay, I grew up with an alcoholic father and now I date people who are addicts, right? Like, those are the ones where we're like, yep, check, check, check. It all, you know, it all checks out. But sometimes, right, the path is an oppositional path, which is what I was saying before, which is the 180. And so it might objectively look like we are choosing differently, okay? And yet we still might find ourselves in a dynamic that isn't as integrated or aligned as it needs to be. So I'll give a very quick example.
Yeah.
If you grew up in a home where there was high conflict, and that conflict could have been really aggressive, it could have been abusive, and you grow up and you're like, I am never going to operate in a relationship with high conflict ever again. And so what you wind up doing is finding yourself in a relationship where there is the absolute avoidance of conflict altogether. Mm-hmm. Now, from the outside looking in, how lovely. No conflict. It's really nice, right? But the reality of it is that that person is not being able to have hard conversations, not expressing themselves. Everything is being held internally. And so that's a really good example of, okay, I'm going to swing this pendulum. I'm not going to do the thing that I saw was super destructive for the adults in my life or was super destructive to me. I'm going to take a totally different path, but does that path have its own issues? And that's what we want to look for too. So back to your question,
you know, yes, the repeat, whether it's repeat or opposition, if there are unwanted patterns, right? Where, and listen, that's all of us. So like, if you're listening, you're like, that's not me. We're like, no, it is you. Right? Like find the thing, right? It's like, what's the unwanted pattern in your life? Really good indicators are like, where are you most reactive in your life? And with
who? What do you mean?
Where are you most reactive? What are the things that activate you? What are the things that irk you? What are the things that get you going? Where do you get into conflict? Where do you feel most insecure? Where do you feel most upset? Where do you feel most disappointed? Right? And is there someone with whom that plays out more times than not? Your reactivity is going to be a really good indicator that there's irresolution. Sabotage, which I will always remind us is still self-protective. But for the folks who are like, oh, I always sabotage things in my life, right? It's like, that's a really good indicator that something is unresolved. People who maybe blow things out of proportion. So it's sort of like reactivity on steroids, right? It's like, wait a second, it doesn't feel like this moment matches what's going on. Oh, we know that that's historical, right? The dysfunctional patterns that we've been talking about, great indicator. And then the last one that I talk about in the book that I think is always surprising to people is when we're able to give advice to others that we can't take.
Oh, okay. What do you mean?
Right? Where you're like, okay, don't text your ex when they text you. And then your ex is texting in your inbox and all of a sudden you can't stop yourself from engaging. Or you're telling somebody you really care about to feel confident and believe in yourself, but under the hood, you're struggling with your own self-confidence and you're struggling to, you know, believe in your worth and your value as a human being, right? It's like when we can give the advice that we really struggle to integrate, that is a really good indicator that there's irresolution there for us from the past that we really have to look for.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a money show for years and years and years, and yet it's called Bad with Money. And I still, like, I went through a breakup that had a big financial component. And I was like, how the fuck? Like, I have this show. My mom is a divorce attorney. And yet somehow I still ended up in like a financially brutal breakup. Like, how? Like, there's so many pieces that, but I think also like my mom, my whole life has been like, very anti-romantic relationship because she's a divorce attorney. So like, I think I went in a hard way of being like, oh, let me just give my everything to romantic relationships because my mom thinks that. Like, I remember I got engaged to my ex-fiance and I was like, I thought it would be funny to tell my mom on FaceTime because I knew she would be upset. Like, that's weird. Like, just to be like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's maybe something about it that wants to provoke something, right? Where, you know, this part of you that has set out to disprove what her message to you has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's maybe something that is damaging about a message that says romantic relationships, ugh, there's no chance, there's no shot, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure from her vantage point, right, like she probably does see some pretty awful stuff. Right. On the day-to-day, but also that is not the only experience that humans have, right? And so this part of you that has set out to disprove her, to be like, I can have a romantic relationship and I can, you know, whatever it means in terms of finances and commingling things or whatever it might be. But yeah, like I totally understand that part that wants to say you're wrong.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be the story of my life. You know, and especially when that story is one that can feel so limiting and can be so limiting. And I don't know. I mean, the kind of crushes our desire for connection and intimacy and love. You know, I think most people do crave that. And, you know, maybe we're jaded along the way or there's, you know, hard things that we see or divorces that, you know, parents go through like mine that say like, I don't want to do that. And the way that I'm going to protect myself is by never getting into a relationship or not believing in love. But I think, you know, again, part of our work is to try to resolve those things so that there is space for discernment. It's not to say that love always works out, obviously.
Right.
But it is to say that we as humans have the capacity to choose and to discern along the way. and to believe that we can co-create something, that it doesn't have to be pigeonholed down this one path that says love is not available and you should just protect yourself and keep your walls high and don't share money with people, or you know, mm-hmm. whatever the storyline might be. But I get why there was a part of you that set out to prove a different point.
Yeah. Well, so with discernment, right? So we were talking about like groups of friends or stuff. So if you're looking, just to go back to that, if you're looking around and you have different people in your life who encourage certain things, like a big part of this show has also been trying to figure out how to say to people, I don't really want to go to brunch, but could we go on a walk or something? Like, is it mm-hmm. like, how do you are you able to like rewrite things in an existing dynamic, or how do you deal, let's say, like specifically in a money thing, but also it could apply to anything else, the whole world around you?
Listen, I actually think existing relationships, if they are good, you know, healthy, loving, caring relationships, whether we're talking about friendship or partnership, like that's a great place to practice. Oftentimes when I'm working with my clients, like, who is your closest friend, right? Who is the person who loves you, cares about you, you trust them, where you can say, hey, okay, in therapy, I'm working on this thing. I have realized that I do XYZ, whether it's I overspend, I am so accommodating to others. So when people say, let's take an Uber, I say yes, even though I can't take the Uber and I can't afford it and I really should be taking public transportation. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm out to dinner with people and I don't drink, but everybody around me is having 4 drinks and now we're all splitting the bill and that feels overwhelming. Right. But my fear of missing out and not having a sense of belonging with these people has me shift away from saying, hey guys, like I can't actually pay for this and I don't drink. And so I'd really like to just pay for my part of the bill. Just some examples. Obviously the list is endless. And I think, you know, the hope would be that with our friends and the people we care about who hopefully care about us too, when we say, here's this thing that I have struggled with, or here's this thing that I have a hard time doing in my life because I am afraid of losing you as a friend, or I'm afraid of missing out, or I'm afraid of disappointing you. And so I do all of these things to try to avoid XYZ. And when I do that, though, I do it at the expense of myself, whether that's the expense of my bank account, whether it's the expense of my mental health, whatever it might be. And so I really want to practice this with you. So can we agree to whatever the thing might be? Like, hey, if we do go out to dinner, do you mind if we actually just pay for the things that we get instead of splitting the bill? It's really overwhelming for me, or it's really hard for me to say no in the moment. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we can do that. And I mean, I hope that people would say yes to that. You
know? Right. Like, if it's like your closest friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, I hope that your friend wouldn't be like, no, you're paying for my drink. Like, that's how it's going to be. But who knows? Maybe that would play out with some folks. But I think there's something to saying, hey, I want to practice this boundary. I always say yes, even when I mean no. So I would like to say no to you and trust that that is not going to ruin our friendship. So the next time that I don't want to go out at night, I'm going to say no. And maybe we can get brunch tomorrow morning, or, you know, right?
Whatever, something like that.
Right. So I think, yes, absolutely. We can practice this in the current relationships that we have. We just need the other person to be willing to be a participant too. And I think friends, you know, usually there's a lot of willingness there. There can be. Sometimes partnerships can be a little bit trickier because if the other person is benefiting from you not having boundaries, right? If the person is benefiting from you operating in your old ways, then that can also be really confronting for them. But I always say, like, you can't just change partners and expect your patterns to go away, right? So we do want to practice this and bring it forward in the current dynamics that we have, if it's safe for us to do it.
I love that, because then you could also check in with your friend and be like, how am I doing?
Call me out.
Yeah. Like, do you feel that the way I'm approaching this with you is respectful and good? Do you think that, like, have I given in too many times?
Yeah.
Hey guys, Gabe Dunn here. I just wanted to let you guys know that I have a Patreon at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. And on that Patreon, I'm going to start doing live hangs with everyone who is a patron. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can get all these episodes ad-free, videos of our mailbag episodes, extra writing from me, blogs, fiction, other stuff, things that I'm thinking about with regards to money and personal stories, and also now live hangs with me on Zoom once a month. So join the Patreon. And if you're not a member of the Discord, hop on over to the Discord. That's free. The link will be in the description. It's so fun. So many of you guys talk over there. It's like truly popping off. And if you're on the Discord, I would love to see you in the live hang so I get to put a face to a name. So yeah, please join patreon.com/GabeSDunn and come hang out with me. I love to track progress. As you guys know from listening to this show, I'm constantly tracking my progress. What have we done so far in 2024? And spring is in full bloom. Are your finances blooming too? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest. And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities for lower rates on loans like for a car or a home. You can use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted. That's right, you can build your credit using your own money. Get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. With a qualifying direct deposit, you can get access to your money sooner. Fee-free overdraft with SpotMe. Overdraft up to $200 without fees with SpotMe when you set up a qualified direct deposit. Just set up a qualifying direct deposit, sign up for SpotMe, and Chime will spot you up to your limit when you make a credit card purchase or cash withdrawal that exceeds your balance. Access 60,000 plus fee-free ATMs. That's more than the top three national banks combined. Easily find one near you with the Chime app. Send and receive money. Use Chime to pay anyone, Chime members or not, and cash out your money fee-free. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And also, there's this element of stuff that I've been learning about now where it's like people feel closer to you when they help you. So like if someone asks you to do a favor or if you ask someone to do a favor, they will feel like important to you and they will feel, I mean, like some bad people might be like, bleh. But like generally, it solidifies a friendship. Like I always thought like I have a friend that I'm very close to, but then I needed help moving something into my apartment. And I was like, well, let me just see if he'll do it. And then I was like, cool. Now we're the type of friends that help each other move things. Like we did it. The exchange has, we have upped, I mean, so whatever, like I'm very autistic with this. So like we've upped one friendship point, you know, like we did it. And so I think there's like the element of being honest too, of being like, hey, I need this, or I'm actually trying not to spend money. Hold me accountable. That's one friendship point.
I would say generally people want to be supportive on our paths to growing and healing and evolving, whatever language you want to use.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people don't want to support on that path, I think that obviously communicates something to us. Mm. And if they're like, nope, I'm going to be really disappointed and I'm going to make you pay for it. And I'm going to punish you by giving you the silent treatment for 2 weeks if you don't come out to, you know, this event, right? It's like those things communicate something to us. And so we do have to risk something though, Gabe, right? Like that's the part of this that is hard, is that on our path to resolution, we are risking things along the way. And that does mean that sometimes we come face to face with consequences that are hard, which is that sometimes we do lose people in our lives, or sometimes people are disappointed in us. And sometimes people do disconnect from us, or our relationships do get severed in some way. And that is an important muscle for us to grow and to be able to tolerate some of that on that path to self-commitment, right? To saying, yeah, I'm willing to risk something in order to be more aligned with myself. I'm willing to risk something in order to not operate in the world at the expense of myself. I know that's hard. It can be really hard for some of us, but it's definitely a big goal.
Well, it's the element of thinking, am I worth this? And also thinking, well, how do I know, like risk assessment, how do I know that not having to worry about money anymore is going to make me feel better or worse? I think it will make me feel better, but how do I know? And you can't know. I mean, I'm not a therapist, but for me, a lot of it is like, I operate as sort of being like, well, you can't know. You can't like try to predict the outcome of every single thing.
No, that becomes control. And life will humble us very quickly when we try to control the things that are outside of our control. You know, it's like there are no guarantees, you know, no human guarantees. Mm-hmm. And so we are risking things. And part of that is getting to live out the experience of trying something on and then seeing how we feel and what's happening in our bodies and what the experience actually is for us. We can't conceptualize it only. We can't theorize it only, right? We have to live some of this stuff out. Mm. And so, yeah, that's the muscle we have to strengthen.
We keep kind of touching on this a little bit, but how does like self-esteem and worthiness tie in to like making changes?
Huge. Worthiness is one of the wounds. It's the first wound in the book that I talk about. The five are worthiness, belonging, prioritization, trust, and safety. When I was writing the book, I was like, I'm kind of sure that every human probably rubs up against a worthiness wound at some point or another. You know, yeah, it's like, it's pretty hard to get out of this life without ever feeling or facing like, am I worthy? Do I have value? Is my worth conditional based on my performance and perfection and pleasing others and making sure I never disappoint or being the comic relief or what? You know, it's like, what role do I have to play?
My salary, my job title.
Yeah. Literally all of it. You know, I mean, I think that that's it's like so many of us, you know, if you're a perfectionist, performer, pleaser, you know, hands up, like likely you have rubbed elbows with the worthiness wound a few times before. And it can be so hard because we want to keep our worth intact, but most of the time it's the illusion of it. So who do I need to be? What role do I need to play? How do I need to show up in the world in order to keep whatever it is I'm trying to keep? Now, if I get the thing I'm trying to keep, love, attention, affection, validation, affirmation, peace, calm in the home, whatever it is, but I'm doing it based on performance, not authenticity, then my worthiness is an illusion. It's not actually experienced as real.
Yeah. Because what if you lose the job, lose the salary, lose the, you know, then what?
Whatever it might be. Yeah. If I don't keep this thing up, whatever the thing might be, then I lose what it is that I crave most. And the reality of it is that even if we perform really well for a long time, our inner world knows. Our inner world knows. So we might, from the outside looking in, it might look really good. Okay, I'm a high achiever. Okay, I'm doing this. Okay, I like the way that I look. People give me attention, whatever it might be. I make a lot of money. I can buy nice things, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, oh no, but our internal worlds know.
Yeah.
Right? Our internal worlds know. And so, yeah, worthiness or the lack thereof, right? When our worth and our value as a human is dependent upon something rather than it just being, because we are human beings.
Yeah. Right?
It's like that's where we will often get really stuck because it can feel like such a risk, right? Like the risk is, again, almost intolerable because the risk of losing connectivity or affirmation or validation feels like a like death to us, honestly.
Definitely. Yes, it definitely is like mourning, grieving, death for sure.
Yeah.
And also, you know, that's capitalism, right? Is saying you are only worthy of life if you have X, Y, and Z. And everything is set up in our society that way. You can only have health insurance if you have a job. You can only have, you know, tax breaks if you're married. You can only have whatever it is, like that. It's all dependent rather than just sort of being like, and I talk on this show a lot about, it's just my politics is like, you know, the idea of universal basic income, the idea of things like that, where it's like, no, you get this money and this ability to survive simply because you are alive and a person. Like we have commodified everything to be like,
right.
And you actually only get safety if you are renting a home from someone else for whatever fee they've decided. Like it's made everything very conditional, which is why money is so stressful to people, because it is like entirely conditional. And then if we decide, you know, oh, you are sick or you got injured or something, like that's subconsciously, I think people think, oh, well, this is your fault in some way. Or there's like tons of stuff that gets put upon religious people, especially talking about like I was obsessed for a while with the prosperity gospel, which is like the idea that God is blessing you with money because you are worthy and a good person and God has chosen you. And so if you don't have a lot of money, it's because God hasn't chosen you. Just all these things are set up to be like, earn life. Hey, you got put here without your consent. Now you should earn it. And it's like, I'm here already.
Right. This is how you have to show up in the world in this specific way in order to win.
Right? Yeah. And what a prize.
And what a prize. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a whole nother podcast. But yeah, what a prize.
Yeah. My podcast about the current state of the world called What a Prize. Uh-huh.
What a prize. Yeah. We could really go down a path there. But you nailed it with the conditional piece, right? Is that,
yeah.
Again, when we're looking at the family system that we grew up in, a lot of times our worth and value is determined by the conditions that the adults set for us. Get straight A's, score hat tricks on the athletic field, look a certain way, be skinny enough. You have to dress this way. We have family secrets. We don't tell anybody about what's happening behind closed doors. There's just a mode of operation. Mm-hmm. And that mode of operation says, if you operate this way, then you can have access to me. I will love you. I will be here for you. I will validate you. I will be kind to you. I will consider you. But when you do not do the list, then maybe I will disconnect from you. I will stop talking to you. Maybe I will abuse you. Maybe I will punish you through the silent treatment, which is one that I experienced, right? And it's like, right? Like that's exhausting for so many of us. And obviously a worthiness wound can show up in lots of different ways. Those conditional love is not the only way that it gets originated, but it's one of the main ways that I see people operating in the world based on, you know, the family systems that they grew up on in and what was expected of them.
Yeah. And then a job is the same way. Even school, like I'm thinking now, right? Like when I struggle with math a lot, and it was because with math, I would maybe get the answer right, but the teacher would be like, half point off, you didn't do it the way I taught you. And right. I was like, good fucking Lord. Like I did it. Like, but it's like, well, you have to learn this method. And that's, right. I mean, it sounds like I'm being dramatic, but that's conditional. Like, and like, the teachers having favorites and stuff. Like it is, it's just like built into achievement and performing the way someone else wants you to, which is why people like my sister who has learning disabilities, like could never get a handle on school. Like it just was like not happening. And then she, you know, we had this long conversation when we both got out of college, she's younger, about how she was like, well, I'm stupid. And I was like, whoa, no, you're not. You're not stupid. And she was like, no, I'm like dumb. I know I'm dumb. And I was like, no, you're not. But like, you know,
I mean, it's a lot of years of receiving feedback, whether it's from parents, teachers, the world at large, right? That is communicating that message. It might not have been that exact language, but the way that it got internalized when people were frustrated or, you know, couldn't meet her learning struggles with, you know, compassion and patience and, you know, the right system that she needed around it, right? It's like, then her takeaway is that I'm dumb, I'm stupid.
Right? Yeah.
And like, that's, gosh, you know, I'm glad that you bring that up because I think the whole, it's about how we internalize our experiences, how each of us internalizes our experiences, right? Like the same thing could have happened to me that happened to you, but the way that you internalize it might be different than the way that I internalize it.
And
it's important that we look at it that way because otherwise we're going to try to fit ourselves into these wound boxes, you know, where it's like, okay, if this thing happened, then it means that I have this. And it's like, wait, a parent could have abandoned you as a kid. And one person might say, okay, I have internalized this in this way. You abandoned me because I was not good enough for you to stick around. Well, the next person might say, you abandoned me because, and now I can't trust important people in my life to stick around. Right. And so it's so important for us to understand what story got created inside of us that is now running the show, right? That is now in the driver's seat.
Yeah. I want to sort of wrap up, but with the wounds, what is prioritization about?
Yeah. So prioritization is when you have the experience of being feeling deprioritized growing up. So a lot of times what this could look like is a workaholic parent, addiction in the household. It could be a sibling. I feel like I might be talking about your life.
I know in so many ways. Wait, say, you're like alcoholic household, siblings who have more needs than you. I was joking with my friend that I do my other show with she went to psychology grad school and we were talking about my problems. And then I was like, she was like, I feel like it's just middle child. And I was like, yeah, what's the DSM for middle child?
Right. It's so funny because I list these off all the time when I'm having these conversations on podcasts. And I realized that the first three that I listed might have been your life.
Like,
oh, yeah, this might really ring true. But yes, right. Like a sibling who has mental health challenges or special needs where parents' attention might be going there.
Multiple siblings.
It could be high conflict. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be high conflict. It could be a parent after a divorce who is obsessed with dating and that's the only thing that they focus on. One example that I do give in the book, because I think it's important to also acknowledge that sometimes these things happen even with well-intentioned parents and caregivers, right? Is that like, I talk about this guy, Andre, that's his alias in the book, who loved and respected his mom, single mama, working multiple jobs. She worked doubles every day, except on Sundays. They would go to church together and then they would go to brunch afterwards. And then she'd go to her shift and he would sit there and he would say like, this is her way of prioritizing me. And he was right. You know, it was like, she was sacrificing. She was doing everything she possibly could to give him the life that she felt he deserved. But what was still true was that he had the experience of being deprioritized and wanting to be prioritized through time spent with his mom.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes we have these like heartbreaking stories where you can see a parent who is absolutely doing everything they possibly can. And yet the experience is still the experience. I want to spend more time with you and I can't. Yeah. And I understand why I can't, but it doesn't change the fact that I still want that and crave that. So lots of ways for a prioritization wound to get there. You know, again, oftentimes we'll go through life, you know, maybe partnering with people who also deprioritize us, or maybe we become somebody who prioritizes everyone and everything to try to model the way that we want people to treat us. Endless, but I know that we're maybe coming to an end here.
No,
go off on a tangent.
No, totally. I mean, I often, you know, I'm not like upset about it because I describe my parents as being like particularly very busy. Like my mom, breadwinner, full-time job, multiple like kids with issues, me pretty fine and normal, dad, like addict, alcoholic. So like, I'm like, well, she had a full-time job and us and like kids with issues. And then like, I was like, you know, and then my dad was like, hey, he had a job. And then also he had this second job of being an addict and alcoholic, which is really just sort of a time suck. Really just takes a lot of time and hours to sort of get all of that in there. So like, you know, I'm like, yeah, they were I feel like I've said like to the girl that I do my show with, like, it's like, you know, if you're in a house and every single person is on fire and, yes, and my mom is who she is, and then I'm lightly singed, but not deeply on fire. She's kind of like, hey, are you on fire? And I'm like, no. And she's like, great.
It's, yeah, like, you're good. I don't have to worry about
everyone
you.
Else is on fire. So it's like, yeah. So then, and then you look around and you go, well, I'm not on fire, so we should really care about these people. And then that kind of carries through to just about everything, which, like, I think, yeah, probably what you would say in your book is that all the wounds touch each other.
They do touch each other. And, yeah, I think I can relate to what you're saying, because what I would say for me was that there wasn't room for me to be on fire. So I wasn't on fire.
Right.
But it was because there wasn't space for me to be on fire.
Right.
And I don't know if that's true for you too, but I think it's just a fascinating exploration to bring our curiosity forward, to be like, oh yeah, like what did happen in this time? And I,
right,
would encourage people to really dive into it, because I think a lot of times we're like, I know my story, I know what happened. And you're like, no, I think that there is a different way for us to approach this. And there is always more for us to learn and understand and connect to as we move through life and as we hit different chapters in our lives. And so, yeah, I would really encourage people, if any of this feels,
yeah,
relevant or resonant, to maybe dive into that book a little further.
Yeah. I mean, even talking to you now, right? Like I've noted in the past that my brother and sister had learning disabilities and like had or I had noted that they needed more. But until speaking to you right now, it did not occur to me that both of their needs came from learning disabilities. And so, mm-hmm, that is a new sort of, to me, interesting little piece to look at, because I was such an overachiever in school and both of their issues had to do with being not so great at school. Now I'm like, mm-hmm, oh, that might be an interesting thing to parse out. But like, I, you know, I've told my story how many times? 100 million times.
Right.
But the learning disability aspect of it is occurring to me now. So, mm-hmm, it's interesting.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah. That is what happens. Well, thank you so much. Where can my audience find you and more about you and your book?
Yeah, of course. Well, thanks for having me. I'm mostly on Instagram at MindfulMFT, as in marriage, family, therapy. And the book is called The Origins of You, How Breaking Family Patterns Can Liberate the Way We Live and Love. And you can get it pretty much anywhere the books are sold. So whatever your favorite bookseller is, go there. Yeah, we're, you know, This Keeps Happening is the podcast, if you want to take a listen, which I think is a really cool way to actually learn, honestly, is to listen to other people's stories. Even though their story might not be yours, you might see yourself in someone, or you might see a partner in someone, or you might, mm-hmm, see a parent in someone. And I just love that way of being able to learn. But all of the offerings that I have going on, you can find in the link in my bio at Instagram. So that's an easy place to find me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Gabe, for having me. Appreciate it.
Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.